This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents The Revenge of Seven by Pittacus Lore. Performed by Neil Kaplan, Devin Sorbery, and Almery Guerra. The events in this book are real. Names and places have been changed to protect the Lorien, who remain in hiding. Other civilizations do exist. Some of them seek to destroy you.
Chapter 1. The nightmare is over. When I open my eyes, there's nothing but darkness. I'm in a bed. That much I can tell, and it's not my own. The mattress is enormous, somehow contoured perfectly to my body. And for a moment, I wonder if my friends moved me to one of the bigger beds in Nine's penthouse. I stretch my legs and arms out as far as they'll go, and I can't find the edges. The sheet draped over me is more slippery than soft, almost like a piece of plastic, and it is radiating heat. Not just heat, I realize, but also a steady vibration that soothes my sore muscles. How long have I been asleep? And where the heck am I? I try to remember what happened to me, but all I can think of is my last vision. It felt like I was in that nightmare for days. I can still smell that burned rubber stench of Washington, D.C. Smog clouds lingered over the city, a reminder of the battle fought there, or the battle that will be fought there, if my vision actually comes true. The visions, are they part of a new legacy? None of the others have legacies that leave them traumatized in the morning. Are they prophecies? Threats sent by Cetricus Ra, like the dreams John and Nate used to have? Are they warnings? Whatever they are, I wish they'd stop happening. I take a few deep breaths to clean the smell of Washington out of my nostrils, even though I know it's all in my head. What's worse than the smell is that I can remember every little detail, right down to the horrified look on John's face when he saw me on that stage, with Cetricus Ra, condemning Six to death. He was trapped in the vision too, just like I was. I was powerless up there, stuck between Cetricus Ra, self-appointed ruler of Earth, and... 5. He's working for the Mogadorians. I have to warn the others. I sit bolt upright and my head swims. Too fast, too soon. Rust-colored blobs floating through my vision. I blink them away, my eyes feeling gummy, my mouth dry and throat sore. This definitely isn't the penthouse. My movement must trigger some nearby sensor, because the room's lights slowly grow brighter. They come on gradually, the room eventually bathed in a pale red glow. I look around for the source of the light and discover it pulsing from veins interwoven through the chrome-paneled walls. A chill goes through me at how precise the room looks, how severe, lacking any decoration at all. The heat from the blanket increases, almost as if it wants me to curl back up beneath it. I shove it away. This is a Mogadorian place. I crawl across the mammoth bed. It's bigger than an SUV, big enough for a 10-foot-tall Mogadorian dictator to comfortably relax in, until my bare feet dangle over the metal floor. I'm wearing a long gray nightgown embroidered with thorny black vines. I shudder, thinking about them putting me into this gown and leaving me here to rest. They could have just killed me, but instead they put me in pajamas? In my vision, I was sitting alongside Cetricus Ra. He called me his heir. What does that even mean? Is that why I'm still alive? It doesn't matter. The simple fact is, I've been captured. I know this. Now what am I going to do about it? I figure the Moogs must have moved me to one of their bases. Except, this room isn't like the horrific and tiny cells that 9 and 6 described from when they were captured. No, this must be the Mogadorians' twisted idea of hospitality. They're trying to take care of me. Cetricus Ra wants me treated more like a guest than a prisoner. Because, one day, he wants me ruling next to him. Why? I still don't understand. But right now, it's the only thing keeping me alive. Oh no. If I'm here, what happened to the others in Chicago? My hands start to shake and tears sting my eyes. I have to get out of here, and I have to do it alone. I push down the fear. I push down the lingering visions of a decimated Washington. I push down the worries about my friends. I push it all down. I need to be a blank slate, like I was when we first fought Cetricus Ra in New Mexico. Like I was during my training sessions with the others. It's easiest for me to be brave when I just don't think about it. If I act on instinct, I can do this. Run, I imagine Creighton saying. Run until they're too tired to chase you. I need something to fight them with. I look around the room for anything I can use as a weapon. Next to the bed is a metallic nightstand, the only other furniture in the room. The Moogs left a glass of water there for me, which I'm not dumb enough to drink, even though I'm insanely thirsty. Next to the glass, there's a dictionary-sized book with an oily, snaky skin cover. The ink on the cover looks singed, the words indented and rough around the edges, as if it were printed with acid for ink. The title reads, The Great Book of Mogadorian Progress, surprisingly in English. Under it are a series of angular boxes and hash marks that I assume is Mogadorian. I pick up the book and open it. Each page is divided in half, English on one side and Mogadorian on the other. I wonder if I'm supposed to read this thing. I slam the book closed. The important thing is that it's heavy and I can swing it. I won't be turning any Mogadorian guards into ash clouds, but it's better than nothing. I climb down from the bed and walk over to what I think is the door. It's a rectangular panel cut into the plated wall, but there aren't any knobs or buttons. As I tiptoe closer, wondering how I'm going to open this thing, there's a mechanical whirring noise from inside the wall. It must be on a motion sensor like the lights, because the door hisses upward as soon as I'm close, disappearing into the ceiling. I don't stop to wonder why I'm not locked down. Clutching the Mogadorian book, I step into a hallway that's just as cold and metallic as my room. Ah, says a woman's voice, you're awake. Rather than guards, a Mogadorian woman perches on a stool outside my room, obviously waiting for me. I'm not sure if I've ever seen a female Moog before, and definitely not one like her. Middle-aged, with wrinkles forming in the pale skin around her eyes, the Moog looks surprisingly unthreatening in a high-necked, floor-length dress, like something one of the sisters would wear back at Santa Teresa. Her head is shaved except for 2 long black braids at the back of her skull, the rest of her scalp covered by an elaborate tattoo. Instead of being nasty and vicious, like the Moogs I've fought before, this one is almost elegant. I stop short in front of her, not sure what to do. The Moog glances at the book in my hands and smiles. And ready to begin your studies, I see, she says, getting up. She's tall, slender, and vaguely spider-like. Standing before me, she dips into an elaborate bow. Mistress Ella, I shall be your instructor while... As soon as her head comes low enough, I smack her across the face with the book as hard as I can. She doesn't see it coming, which I guess is strange because all the Moogs I've encountered have been ready to fight. This one lets out a short grunt and then hits the floor with a fluttering of fabric from her fancy dress. I don't stop to see if I've knocked her out or if she's pulling a blaster from some hidden compartment in that dress. I run, choosing a direction at random, and hurtling down the hallway as fast as I can. The metal floor stings my bare feet, and my muscles begin to ache, but I ignore all that. I have to get out of here. Too bad these secret Mogadorian bases never have any exit signs. I turn one corner and then another, sprinting through hallways that are pretty much identical. I keep expecting sirens to start blaring now that I've escaped, but they never do. There aren't any heavy Mogadorian footfalls chasing after me either. Just when I'm starting to get winded and thinking about slowing down, a doorway opens on my right and two Mogadorians step forward. They're more like the ones I'm used to. Burly, dressed in their black combat gear, beady eyes glaring at me. I dart around them, even though neither of them makes any attempt to grab me. In fact, I think I hear one of them laughing. What is going on here? I can feel the two Moog soldiers watching me run, so I duck down the first hallway that I can. I'm not sure if I've been going in circles or what. There isn't any sunlight or outside noises at all. Nothing to indicate that I might be getting closer to an exit. It doesn't seem like the Moogs even care what I do. Like they know I've got no chance to get out of here. I slow down to catch my breath, cautiously inching down this latest sterile hallway. I'm still clutching the book, my only weapon, and my hand is starting to cramp. I switch hands and press on. Up ahead, a wide archway opens with a hydraulic hiss. It's different from the other doors, wider, and there are strangely blinking lights on the other side. Not blinking lights, stars. As I walk under the archway, the metal-plated ceiling gives way to a glass bubble, the room wide open, almost like a planetarium, except real. There are various consoles and computers protruding from the floor. Maybe this is some kind of control room, but I ignore them, drawn instead to the dizzying view through the expansive window. Darkness. Stars. Earth. Now I understand why the Mogadorians weren't chasing me. They know there's nowhere for me to go. I'm in space. I get right up to the glass, pressing my hands against it. I can feel the emptiness outside, the endless, ice-cold, airless space between me and that floating blue orb in the distance.
Glorious, isn't it?
His booming voice is like a bucket of cold water dumped on me. I spin around and press my back to the glass, feeling like the void behind me might be preferable to facing him. Cedricus Ross stands behind one of the control panels, watching me, a hint of a smile on his face. The first thing I notice is that he's not nearly as huge as he was when we fought him at Dulcy Base. Still, Cedricus Ross is tall and imposing, his broad physique clad in a stern black uniform, studded and decorated with an assortment of jagged Mogadorian medals. Three Loric pendants, the ones he took from the dead guard, hang from around his neck, glowing a subdued cobalt.
I see you've already taken up my book.
he says, gesturing to my dictionary-sized club. I didn't realize I was clutching it to my chest.
Although not necessarily in the way I'd hoped. Fortunately, your proctor wasn't badly injured.
Suddenly, in my hands, the book begins to glow red, just like the piece of debris I picked up back at Dulce Base. I don't know exactly how I'm doing it, or even what I'm doing.
Ah,
Cetricus Ross says, watching with a raised eyebrow.
Very good.
Go to hell, I scream, and fling the glowing book at him. Before it's even halfway to him, Cetricus Ra raises one huge hand, and the book stops in midair. I watch as the glow I'd infused it with slowly fades.
Now, now, he chides me. Enough of that.
What do you want from me? I shout, frustrated tears filling my eyes.
You already know that,
he replies.
I showed you what's to come, just as I once showed Pittacus Lore.
Cetricus Ra hits a few buttons on the control panel in front of him, and the ship begins to move. Gradually, the Earth, seeming both impossibly far and also like it's so close I could reach out and grab it, drifts across my view. We aren't moving towards it. We're turning in place.
You are aboard the Anubis,
Cetricus Ra intones, a note of pride in his gravelly voice.
The flagship of the Mogadorian fleet.
When the ship completes its turn, I gasp. I reach out and press my hand against the glass for support, knees suddenly weak. Outside, in orbit around the Earth, is the Mogadorian fleet. Hundreds of ships, most of them long and silver, about the size of small airplanes, just like the ones the guard have described fighting before. But among them are at least 20 enormous warships that dwarf the rest. Looming and menacing, mounted cannons jutting off their angular frames, aimed right at the unsuspecting planet below. No, I whisper. This can't be happening. Cetricus Ra walks towards me, and I'm too shocked by the hopeless sight before me to even move. Gently, he drapes his hand on my shoulder. I can feel the coldness of his pale fingers through my gown.
The time has come,
he says, gazing at the fleet with me.
The great expansion has come to Earth at last. We will celebrate Mogadorian progress together, granddaughter.
Chapter 2. From the cracked second-floor window of an abandoned textile factory, I watch an old man in a ragged trench coat and filthy jeans crouch down in the doorway of the boarded-up building across the street. Once he's settled, the man pulls a brown-bagged bottle from his coat and starts drinking. It's the middle of the afternoon. I'm on watch. And he's the only living soul I've seen in this abandoned part of Baltimore since we got here yesterday. It's a quiet, deserted place, and yet it's still preferable to the version of Washington, D.C. I saw in Ella's vision. For now, at least, it doesn't look like the Mogadorians have pursued us from Chicago. Although, technically, they wouldn't have to. There's already a Mogadorian among us. Behind me, Sarah stomps her foot. We're in what used to be the foreman's office, dust everywhere. The floorboard's swollen and mildewed. I turn around just in time to see her frowning at the remains of a cockroach on the bottom of her sneaker. Careful! You might go crashing right through the floor, I tell her, only half joking.
I guess it was too much to ask for all your secret bases to be in penthouse apartments, huh?
Sarah asks, fixing me with a teasing smile. We slept in this old factory last night.